A very good evening to you. Welcome along once again to Sweet and Swing here on Mike's Radio. As usual, H behind the phonograph. And what have we got? Well, how about a bit of Shearing piano? Some big band Bunny Berrigan. Try saying that six times quickly. More from Carol Gibbons in our little retrospective. Something for Paul Quine. Better get us going. Have you noticed any of these lately? Good enough way to get going, isn't it? The red robin comes bobbing along. Might be a little bit late in the year. I don't know about robins. I've got a starling in my garden. I say a starling. I don't know how long. I think starlings live, what, 5, 6, 7 years, that sort of lifespan. Am I right there? Suffice to say that starlings have been nesting in the same little spot, tucked in behind the weatherboarding at the back of my garage, for at least 10 years now. So it can't be the same bird. So somehow or other, they keep coming back there. So I'm always fascinated to know whether they sort of pass it on to the next generation or how that works. Either that or it's a very old starling. I don't know. Either way, regular as clockwork, every year, come nesting season, and sometimes two broods, you get a starling in there and you can hear all the noise. They do make a bit of a mess on the thing outside, but you know what? It's probably worth it. I can hose it off and it's rarely warm enough or sunny enough to actually sit there to worry about the fact there's a bit of bird poo on the deck. But yeah, they are there all the time. Red robins, I suppose it's more of a wintry bird, is it? You get them at this time of the year, but I haven't seen so many robins as starlings of late out the back. Lou Prager, in any case, getting us going there with the Sunnysiders, a post-war vocal group. I don't know who it was actually made up of, no names, and even when I looked in the Book of Words, the second book of British dance bands, it doesn't name the Sunnysiders, other than to say they sang with Lou Prager, and they were named, of course, after his signature tune, On the Sunny Side of the Street. Yeah, we could do with the sunny side of the street at the moment, quite frankly, couldn't we? Surrender. That was Frank Weir, another name that lost in the mists of time, I dare say. Frank Weir and his orchestra with Johnny Carroll and the Radio Revellers. It is that sort of sound, almost sort of heading towards the 50s sort of sound there, isn't it, I think, in many ways. And that'd be 1940s, I think, or thereabouts. Possibly a little bit earlier. No actual recording date on that one from a collection of great British dance bands of the 40s. So we know it's in the 40s somewhere. I would suggest towards the upper end of the 40s, but who knows? Do shout out if you know. You might be the biggest Frank Weir fan on the island or on the planet. I don't care either way if you are, and you can give me more details and suggestions. Let me know. Howard Kane at manxradio.com. C-A-I-N-E at manxradio, all lowercase, all one word. And it would be lovely to hear from you with any thoughts. I can tell you, that, of course, that Frank Weir worked for Jack Hilton and Howard Jacobs and then became, during the war, a leader himself in his own right, as we heard there, and continued after the war as well, I think, leading his own bands. and toured again post-war with a big band, which included this man on piano. Well, that was rather lovely, wasn't it? Stella by Starlight, given an interpretation on solo piano by none other than George Shearing, who indeed used to be the pianist with Frank Weir and his band post-war. Wonderful, that was a great reading, very imaginative, very modern sounding. 1956, I think that was recorded by the looks of it, in Los Angeles. So going back quite a way. And Shearing, well, again, as we often say, for me, the quintessential Shearing sound is the quintet, which really brought him to prominence, I guess, when he did so popular doing those concerts with the quintet, which featured vibraphone and electric guitar, bass, drums, piano, no horns. Great sound, unique sound. And it's referred to, actually, in the notes for this album on Capitol Jazz, as it says here, one of the most renowned pianists in popular music, George can be likened to no others in terms of reaching the general public. Shearing was at the height of his success, as widely recognised and enjoyed as Fat Swallow a decade earlier, but in terms of the depth of his musical knowledge and the breadth of his appeal, there's no comparison. Shearing, of course, left England to settle in the States in the late 1940s and had to sort of remodel his approach to music. The pianists who really inspired him, Teddy Wilson, Art Tatum, Nat King Cole, were alive and well, and as it's noted, in no need of any imitators. I bet they weren't, one way or another. So within a year or so of Shearing's arrival, his new bebop-influenced playing and his individual group sound, of course, of the quintet brought him a great big fan base and reputation that he would never have imagined when he started out playing in the blind school in London when he was a young lad. But he worked, yeah, for quite a while. He capitalised on this quite a bit, if you'll excuse the pun, bearing in mind he's on Capitol Records. But there's a lovely line here, said, instead of having his keyboard wrapped in the quintet's overall overcoat of guitar and vibraphone and or topped off with a scarf of soft strings, his musicality was so exposed directly to the listener's expectations in the solo format. He not only triumphed, but demonstrated his total command of the piano in a way that had seldom been noted before. And partly this was due to his classical training, which surfaces in the passing allusions to all manner of composers. And yeah, you definitely feel from that solo there, don't you, that he was classically trained. Wonderful stuff. Yeah, we'll come back to that one at some stage. Very nice indeed. George Shearing, can't go wrong. And I'll maybe play some of the quintet stuff in the next week or two, because you know what, I love that. There'll be a something. I don't always just play stuff I like. I try to do a mix of stuff that I think, well, I don't know whether I play that necessarily, but it fits in very nicely into Sweet and Swing. And as we always say in radio, someone out there, it'll be their favourite. So they'll be hopefully clasping their cup of cocoa and thinking, oh gosh, I haven't heard that for ages, and feeling a bit better for it. And Lord knows, we could all do with feeling a bit better in the world of late, can't we? I don't know whether Beryl Bryden will help with that, but she's got a great voice, and she is actually imitating someone else, the great Bessie Smith. Beryl Bryden and the Blue Boys, a BBC celebration of the music of Betty Smith. I've got what it takes, she says. Well, she certainly has on this one. Give me a pigfoot and a bottle of beer.
25 cents? Uh-uh. I wouldn't give 25 cents to go in nowhere. So listen here. Up in Harlem, every Saturday night, when the high browns get together, it's just too tight. They all congregate at an all-night strut. And what they do is tut, tut, tut. Old Hannah Brown from way across town gets full of corn and starts breaking them down. When at the break of day, you can hear old Hannah say, give me a pigfoot, yeah, and a bottle of beer. Send me gate, 'cause I don't care. I feel just like I wanna act the clown. Give the piano player a drink because he's bringing me down. He's got rhythm, yeah, when he stomps his feet. He sends me right off to sleep. Check all your razors and your guns. We're gonna be arrested when the wagon comes. Give me a pigfoot and a bottle of beer. Send me 'cause I don't care. good. Yeah, and a bottle of beer. Send me gay, cause I don't care. I feel just like I want a clown. And if he had a blair a drink, because he's bringing me down. He's got rhythm, yeah, when he stomps his feet. He sends me right off to sleep. Check all your razors and your guns. To the shim, sham, shimmy, to the rising sun. Give me a reefer and a gang of gin. Slay me cause I'm in my sin.
What a great laugh. I love that. Beryl Bryden, the sort of British queen of the blues in many ways. Beryl Bryden and the Blue Boys. Blue Boys being made up of, she just referenced one of them there, Keith Nichols on the piano, also a musical director for the band. No stranger to the Isle of Man, he either. He played over here several times. Wonderful ragtime specialist and player of Scott Joplin and such like, and would do wonderful musical evenings where he'd talk about the music as well and play in between. And a lovely chap. I did meet him several times, I'm happy to say. Dennis Field Cornet, Cy Laurie clarinet, Roy Williams, the wonderful Roy Williams, ran for so long on trombone, Pete Corrigan bass, Ron Horton on drums, and I think we heard him there briefly, did we? On Washboard, I think we did. Beloved of the Dixie style. Again, I'm not actually a fan of the Dixie style per se, but when it's done well, you can't help but like it a bit. And she can definitely sing and they can definitely play. And I do like Bessie Smith. And if you haven't heard, I mean, she was Beryl, obviously, imitating. And this whole album is dedicated to the music of Bessie Smith. And when she recorded that, she had been in the, Beryl herself had been in the business over 50 years as Britain's Queen of the Blues. And still going strong, it has to be said, by the sound of that. And it's worth checking out, if you like that sort of sound, and you've not checked out Bessie Smith before, go and check out the original recordings of Bessie Smith. There's so much raw energy and power there. And, wonderful. Even I am, again, not a massive fan of the female jazz vocalist per se. I mean, obviously, I love Sarah and Ella and Billie Holiday and such like, but overall, it's not part of the genre I enjoy the most. But nonetheless, when you hear good jazz vocalist, you can't help but stand back and wonder at their talent, it has to be said. And Bessie Smith had lots of raw talent and loads of raw energy. And yeah, the stories and the words just make you smile as well, as you got very clearly enunciated there by Beryl. The fact that they're all that at a boozer, and they're probably going to get raided because during Prohibition. Wonderful stuff. Beryl Bryden and the Blue Boys. Right, let's... dare I say, get a bit more tasteful? Is that being rude? I don't know, but you know what I mean. I'm just going from the sort of the back room with the pig foot and the bottle of beer into the dining room, and a very nice dining room at that, with a large white grand piano situated. Waiters gliding around in hushed tones, holding silver platters with champagne flutes aboard, and cocktails with olives dangling out, and thick carpet, and probably the smell of cigarette smoke in the air, because it would be the 1930s as well. This would be the land of Carol Gibbons.
There be another you.
I would shed a million tears if ever we were through.
Never in a million moons could you ever be surpassed.
And darling, for a million Junes, this love of ours will last.
There would be no world for me if ever we should part.
Where I go, your name will be right on the tip of my heart.
For only once in every lifetime someone just like you appears.
Is there any greater glory,
any greater thrill, more never than a million years?
Lovely. Never in a Million Years. Carol Gibbons from the album Sand in My Shoes, and accompanied there, or at least with the, on the vocals, I should say, Ann Lenner and George Melacrino with Carol and the Savoy Hotel Orpheans, of course. George himself, an interesting character, in as much as you can tell, he could croon rather nicely there. However, he was amazingly gifted in many ways, and set out, I think this was a very sort of conscious thing he set out to do, to master all the instruments of the orchestra. And the skeet on the street is he succeeded in this ambition, with the exception of he never became particularly proficient on the piano or harp. But everything else, violin, trombone, trumpet, clarinet, oboe, etc., etc., he became pretty darn good at. Not bad, eh? Not bad. A rare achievement, indeed, as it's noted. And also, before he became a major band leader, he sang with several of the bands of the time, including, as we heard there, Carol Gibbons, and also he sang for a time with Jack Jackson. So, yeah, another one of those things. How do you manage to become proficient at so many instruments? Doesn't seem fair, does it? I mean, I struggle to get proficient on one or two at most. So Carol Gibbons, our little retrospective, it was a fluke really that brought him over to London and to England from his native, where he was, that's Clinton, Massachusetts. He'd been studying there at the Boston Conservatory when he and his pal, the sax-playing crooner Rudy Vallée, were both recommended to the Savoy. The Wire read, apparently. Yes, they were both recommended, but the Wire came back from the Savoy. Send Vallée. Keep Gibbons. They didn't need a pianist. That was the long and the short of it. However, by the time the Wire got there, it was too late because they both thought they were both wanted and they were both on their way. And, of course, they didn't fly in those days. They'd come on the boat. So on arrival in July of 1924, Carroll so impressed everyone with his wonderful piano playing that he was put into the Boston Orchestra under Howard Jacobs at the Barclay Hotel. And soon he was leading the eight-piece Sylvians at the Savoy. The Savoy Sylvians. And they were playing with and quickly leading the Savoy Orpheans. And that's who we heard there, of course. So we started with the Sylvians and went on to the Savoy Orpheans. And as he was thrust into the spotlight, he was inevitably, as is always the case, once you sort of go along, and first of all, you have to wedge your foot in the door to get in there, as he did. But if you've got the talent, then all of a sudden people start noticing on you and they actually start wanting you. Then so he was headhunted by HMV, who went on to appoint him their musical director of light music in charge of the studio-based new Mayfair Dance Orchestra, preceding one Ray Noble. A talented chap. Great glasses. He does actually, again, I always, whenever I look at it, not only does he sound like, but he actually looks like, or bears more than a passing resemblance, should I say, to Dad. Yeah, the young maestro, the old maestro, the young maestro as he was then. If I look at pictures of Dad in his early years, and then you look at a picture of Carol Gibbons as a young man, there's more than a passing resemblance. And his style, or their styles, without a doubt, Dad, the old maestro, was influenced by the sound of Carol Gibbons, who he liked very much. Can't say I blame him.
I hear music, mighty, mighty pretty music. The murmur of the morning breeze up there, the rattle of a milkman on the stair. Sure, that's music, mighty, mighty pretty music. The singing of a sparrow in the sky, perking of the coffee right nearby. That's my favorite melody. You, my angel, phoning me. I hear music, mighty, mighty fine music. And anytime I think my world is wrong, I get me out of bed and sing this song. I hear music, mighty, mighty pretty music. The murmur of the morning breeze up there, rattle of the milkman on the stair. Sure, that's music, mighty, mighty pretty music. The singing of a sparrow in the sky, the perking of the coffee right nearby. There's my favorite melody. You, my angel, phoning me. I hear music, mighty, mighty pretty music. And anytime I think my world is wrong, I get me out of bed and sing pretty music. Pretty, pretty music. Get me out of bed and sing all day long. Pretty, pretty music.
Close to together. Dear love, I will leave you never. For now, when I hear that starlight serenade, I know love will last forever. You are my star.
Bob Dale with Starlight Serenade, along with Oscar Rabin and the Boys. And Oscar Rabin, another well-known character and a good band leader, well-known for quite some time. The Hammersmith Palais, well, that'd been a well-known dance hall since the first 20 years of the 20th century, November 1919, when it opened with the original Dixieland jazz band from America, which many credit as the first time jazz really started to sort of be played or was heard in the UK. And during the 20s and 30s, most British bands appeared there. And in 1935, Oscar successfully took over the stand for 5 years. And it was only really the outbreak of World War II in 1939 that put an end to his tenancy there. The band was actually known as Oscar Rabin and his Romany Band with Harry Davis. Chips off the tongue. No problem at all, that, doesn't it? Oscar Rabin and his Romany Band with Harry Davis, the explanation being that Oscar was... well, he was the, you know, he was the brains and the musician, as it were, to a large degree. However, it's all about looks, isn't it? Then as now, whether we like it, and I know it's not very PC these days, but frankly, it's still very much the same. You only have to look at models and TV and adverts and everything else. It's all about the looks one way or another. So Oscar was in stature, rather short, a little bit tubby, a bit bald on top, and also incredibly shy. So he rather liked to hide behind the big bass instrument in his own saxophone section, while his longtime friend Harry Davis just so happened to be rather tall and rather elegant looking, and by most opinions rather handsome. And so he conducted the band with much emphasis on showmanship rather than any particular direction. So it looked wonderful, even if he didn't have much of a clue what he was doing. Didn't matter. The sound was great because Oscar could sort of rehearse the band and do it behind, and then he could be happy playing the music, probably conducting from the band and keeping the music sounding wonderful and making the arrangements and all the rest of it. But he didn't actually have to have the limelight. And Harry, who enjoyed all that because he had the looks, and the audience loved that because they had a tall, dark, handsome man conducting out the front. Yes, I know it might not be PC in these very PC days, but as I respectfully suggest, that's certainly the way it was in days of yore. And I would equally respectfully suggest that whilst we don't like to think it, that's pretty much the way it still is now. Call me a cynic if you will. You're a cynic. Yeah, I know. I mentioned Paul Quine at the beginning, a long-time listener to the show. Hello to you, Paul, as ever. I saw him the other day. Actually, we had a bit of a chat, and he followed it up with an email saying, "Oh, nice to see you the other day. I heard my name being mentioned during Sweet and Swing on Friday night and the possibility of playing a request, and that got me thinking." Well, yeah, you and me both. "If you'd be so good, I'd like to request Midnight in Moscow by Kenny Ball and his Jazzmen. But then I thought, where does trad jazz lie?" Oh, good question. "Is it within the wide spectrum of Sweet and Swing, or does it belong in Jumping In? Perhaps," he says, "it's one of those numbers which sits equally comfortably within both and illustrates the connection between the sister programmes." Well, I like to think there is a connection between the programmes, Paul, indeed, and that I inherited this one from the old maestro, and it was very much... he actually had another show, of course, called Jim's Jazz Hour for a while, which was much more straight jazz, not so much swing or nostalgia or sweet music, if we can call it that, but very much more jazz-based, and would cover jazz mostly up to the sort of bebop era. And the idea for Jumping In was to cover... Again, we will go back to the bebop era, and I love a bit of bebop and earlier jazz, but predominantly it's covering the modern jazz scene and current and contemporary jazz, of which there is an awful lot from around the globe. Whereas, as you say, Sweet and Swing has got a very broad remit. And as Paul says, it'd be interesting to know your views. So this is pretty much them, I think. It'd be very nice to blow the dust off it and give it a spin. Well, yeah, I think that's the way it goes. So jumping in definitely is at the modern end of the spectrum. So, in my humble opinion, bearing in mind that I present them both, so I can afford to be right for once, jumping in is the contemporary side of things. So I wouldn't normally slot something like Midnight in Moscow in there, because it's probably just a bit too old. We'll certainly do anything back to the sort of 50s and 60s, bebop and early bebop and such like, and perhaps very late swingy, maybe occasionally. But by and large, we tend to keep it at the contemporary side of things. Whereas, as you quite correctly point out, Sweet and Swing has a very broad remit, in as much as it will cover all jazz, so long as it sort of swings. So again, I wouldn't necessarily put Ornette Coleman into Sweet and Swing, or a lot of contemporary players, Shabaka Hutchings or something. No, that's going to go into Jumping In. Whereas, something like Kenny Ball, beloved of TV, one stage every Saturday you'd see Kenny Ball. He'd be playing with the Morecambe and Wise, he'd be with the Black and White Minstrel Show, he'd be with, you name it, you know, all the peak time Saturday evening would have Kenny Ball featuring one way or another. And did he have his own show at one stage? I think he might have done, did he? I can't remember, but I do remember him watching a lot. And I remember seeing him over here in latter years as well at the Villa Marina. So to answer your question, yes, Paul. I don't think it fits into Jumping In, but yes, it most certainly does fit in, as far as I'm concerned, into Sweet and Swing. Can't help but smile when you listen to it. And he definitely could play old Kenny. He was a great showman, but he could play. And like I say, in the peak period of the band, they were all over the shop. They had records out and they were on TV, on radio, and yeah, and touring. And as I say, no stranger to the Isle of Man. I never actually met him as far as I recall. I definitely saw him once. I don't remember ever actually speaking to him or being introduced, but he played into a reasonable degree of old age, I seem to recall. And then gradually that sort of style went out again, a bit out of fashion, as fashions come and go. And yeah, these days you don't hear him so often. So it's nice to give him an airing, isn't it, Paul? I agree. And he fits very nicely, thank you, into Sweet Swing. Thank you for that idea. Lovely stuff. Now, I promised you some Bunny Berrigan Big Band. Not easy to say. The legendary big bands, Bunny Berrigan, well, a legendary character himself, died tragically young, unfortunately, due to a fair amount of alcohol abuse. Born in Wisconsin, I've been to Wisconsin, that neck of the woods, got a friend out there in 1908 and died in New York in 1942. Started out in violin, then took up trumpet and doubled on both instruments until 1927, and played lots of local bands before he moved to the Big Apple in 1929. Went back home for a short time and then back to New York to join the Hal Kemp Orchestra in the spring of 1930. And the Kemp Orchestra toured Europe and had a residency in London from May to September of that year. Wonderful stuff. Let's hear Bunny Berrigan. How about a good way to get started? Well, he can't. He can't get started. But I'll give him a nudge and we'll probably get him going then. Off you go, Bunny.
Thank you.
good note to end on in so many ways, both, yes, in reality and metaphorically as well. Bunny Berrigan, I Can't Get Started. He formed his own band in the spring of 1937, it was, and that was the year they recorded, and I think that's where that recording came from. I Can't Get Started is a classic version. They went on to tour, and they made records, but by 2 or 3 years later, 1940, they were forced to disband due to bankruptcy. Not uncommon, I think, with so many jazz bands. They will say, how do you make £1 million in jazz? And the answer is, start out with £2 million. But he became more interested, Bunny himself, in the sort of band's musical achievements and the business side. Tommy Dorsey, who was a pal, helped to ease the financial problems and offered Berrigan employment from March to August 1940. But he was determined to succeed with his big band and regroup the big band in 1941, Bunny did. But the new band just didn't have the same impact as the earlier orchestra. Never easy to sort of come back with something, is it, in that same way. He was then taken ill, as I say, not helped by the fact that he was a very heavy drinker and suffered from alcoholism. He got pneumonia, and in April 1942 he was hospitalised, but left the following month against the doctor's orders and continued touring, and unfortunately then ended up with having a hemorrhage and being ill and returned to hospital, and he died pretty much penniless. Well, that's a fairly recurrent theme in the jazz world, it has to be said, sadly. And yes, who paid for the funeral expenses? Tommy Dorsey, again, stumped up the Reddies, which is, well, I think they were friends, and I think he realised that he'd had a tough old time and maybe not made some good decisions here and there. And so he did the decent thing, very generously as well, and you so often hear those sort of stories in the jazz world. Happily, maybe not quite so much now, and that we were talking about this the other day, how back in the day, yeah, sort of drugs and alcohol and jazz all went together like a hard-boiled egg and salt. These days, if you go to jazz concerts and you see a lot of the contemporary jazz players, young ones coming up, mostly, A, they've all been university educated, of course, unlike Bunny and so many of his contemporaries from back in the early part of the 20th century, and B, an awful lot of them are very, very clean living. They enjoy yoga and veganism and whole foods, and drink water on stage, and yeah, the sort of the old days of the hard drinking, hard smoking, hard drugging jazzers, happily, I think, has been consigned to the history books. And probably not a bad thing either. Although I grant you, the pictures don't look quite as atmospheric without all the cigarette smoke swirling around. Before I go, I have a horrible suspicion I didn't tell you our little twofer, the first one of course, Blossom Dearie. How could I not tell you about Blossom? Wonderful track, I Hear Music. Ray Brown at the bass, Joe Jones at the drums. Hopefully I won't forget anything else. And I won't forget to see you next week. Same time, same place. See you then. Cheerio.